Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me on What Mama Wants. I kind of think Mother Earth wants less toxics and more health. This is a chance to hear from educators, citizens, policymakers, and scientists about the role toxics are playing in our daily lives. Things like PFAS, plastic, and arsenic. And we always wonder what Mother Earth wants while we're at it. My guest today is Sarah Woodbury. She's the director of advocacy at Defend Our Health. As a lobbyist, she works closely with legislators and coalition partners to advance Defend's mission of fighting for safe products, food, and drinking water. Welcome to What Mama Wants, Sarah. I'm delighted to have you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Kate. Thanks for having me.
It's kind of fun, right?
It is fun. This is different.
It's great to be in the studio. So your job is to get government to act, kind of a bottom line mission. You've done similar lobbying and communications work in D.C. for the Anti-Defamation League and Planned Parenthood Federation of America, using your master's degree in applied politics. I love that for a title for a master's degree, applied politics from American University, and your B.S. is in political science from Portland State University. Here's my question. How many lobbyist jokes do you know right off the top of your head?
That's funny. I actually don't think I know any lobbyist jokes. I just know what people say about lobbyists and the bad things that people say about lobbyists, which as a lobbyist, I don't necessarily think are true. I think there's some truth to some of it. The high powered corporate lobbyists that have all the control in Washington, D.C., and they get all these meetings or have all these relationships with members of Congress. And because of their money and their influence and their power, they influence policy, and the little guy does not have an opportunity to have their voices heard in that process. But as somebody who is a lobbyist for a small nonprofit, I like to think that we do good work. Our voices need to be heard in this process, and we lobby for things like access to clean drinking water, safe drinking water, access to safe food, access to toxic-free, climate-friendly products, and those are all good things. I have lobbyist friends that do amazing work around reproductive health, around climate work. So I think that we need to kind of adjust our thinking about what a lobbyist is and not always assume that that is somebody out for the betterment of corporate America or for the money or for the power. There are folks like me that do it because they care about these issues and they want to see good policy made to help protect those here in Maine and across the country. So most of the work I do here is locally focused in Maine. We do some federal policy work, but we want to be a voice for those that don't, you know, have the time or the resources to do so. We can be a voice in the room to help push for those policies that protect folks.
I think that is really well said. I learned while I was researching it that this profession goes back about 450 years, back to Westminster, when the guilds would send somebody, you know, while they were doing their blacksmithing or their agriculture, they'd send somebody who could talk to the people that made the choices.
Yeah, and I think I mean, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Thanks for the tip of the day there, Kate. I can use that maybe for trivia or something. But I do think it's important for folks like me and for folks that do the work to be there to be able to help those that can't. So, like, we have a lot of supporters that care about getting toxic chemicals out of their products, out of their food, out of their water. But they also have kids and lives and jobs and don't have time to sit up in Augusta all day like I do to wait to talk to legislators. So it's important to have somebody that is able to do that and make sure that the voices of those folks that care about these issues are heard. And you're not just hearing from the American Chemistry Council or the folks that represent like DuPont and all these other big, massive chemical manufacturers that have a little bit more resources than we do.
Yeah, I think you make a really great point. It depends who you're representing and what laws you're trying to pass, which makes you a good lobbyist or a Darth lobbyist.
Like a Sith Lord. It's true. We work closely with some of those lobbyists that work in those fields. And they're not evil human beings or anything like that. But they are pushing for policies that hurt people, that can make it so that folks get more exposed to toxic chemicals, have policies that hurt what we're doing around our climate, that are putting more plastics in our waters, that are making it easier for industry to basically poison us. And so we need to make sure that we're there to have, you know, have those conversations and push back against those folks, even if they are nice human beings. So,
yeah. Well, it's important to show up, right? If you weren't there, who knows what happened?
Exactly. Just roll exactly. Right over us. We do like to think we make a difference. So,
and in order to be a really good lobbyist, I think the number one job qualification is being persuasive. Like somehow you have to get policymakers to pay attention to the facts of this is not good for you in this way. What's your best skill that you use to inform coalitions?
So I think, well, like you said, persuasion and the ability to talk to people. I've always been a talker. Part of my job is like writing things. And I'm like, do I have to actually like write this memo? Can I just pick up the phone and call somebody? Because I'm much better at that. So I think just being able to build those relationships, I think relationship building is very important in the work that we do. Whether you agree with somebody or not, being able to find common ground and meet people kind of where they're at so they understand where you're coming from, I think is very important. I think just having the time to be able to do that is important. And I think in terms of kind of the coalitions and the legislators, just showing up again and again and kind of being a presence there. But I do think the relationship building is by far the most important part of my job. Just being able to sit down with a legislator from either side and explaining things to them. So a lot of the work that we do is very like science heavy. My background is not in science. I am not a scientist. I do not have a science background. So I think the other skill that I bring is being able to take that information, which might not be really something that folks that don't have a science background can understand, is easily digestible, and being able to make that easily digestible for folks that might not kind of understand the issue. Now, that's not to say that I necessarily am, you know, I have help from my staff to be able to do that and explain those things. But I think as someone who doesn't have a science background that's dealing in issues that are very scientifically based, having someone that can disseminate that information in a way that people understand is really important. And I think that that is a skill that all lobbyists have to have because, you know, all the issues that we're dealing with, for the most part, can be very technical, very involved. And we have such limited time to talk to people that you really have to be able to distill it down into something that people understand very easily and also make it resonate with them. Like who is impacted in your community, who in your family might be exposed to this, that type of stuff. You have to be able to tell those stories to make people really care about the issue. It can't just be because the science said so. You have to be able to bring it back to how it is impacting their community, how it is impacting their family, how it is impacting their constituents, and why people should care about it.
That is why you are so successful. That is not easy to do, and I hear it all the time. You know, find common ground. Can you give us one trade secret about how you find common ground?
Well, I think it's interesting. I think a lot of that is just doing some research about what is going on in somebody's district, what is going on in somebody's community, and being able to bring that back to them and being like, look, we might not agree because we're very bipartisan. Our work is very bipartisan. We tend to have massive bipartisan support for all of our legislation. And that's because these issues are impacting everybody. So you can point to, for instance, a legislation that we just worked on around spreading biosolids or sludge on farmland. We worked with Representative Rudnicki. She's a very conservative Republican, but her community, Fairfield, is incredibly impacted. And so just being able to point to her and being like, look, you have over 200 people in your community that have contaminated wells. And that is something, you know, it takes time for us to be able to get that data, get that research, and go back to them and say, this is happening in your community. But I think that's how you find common ground, is you point out how it's impacting kind of folks all around them. And also, like, the way that you talk about it, too. You know, depending on who you're talking to, you can either be talking about it from like a, this is impacting climate and this is impacting health, or you could be like, this is impacting jobs, this is impacting the economy. Like, you also have to adjust your message for who you're having those conversations with and what you might think might resonate with them more than another person. So
is anybody in your family or friend circle surprised you do this work?
I don't think so. I've always been really, well, I shouldn't say always, but when I started going to undergrad, I really started to get involved in kind of more politics and activism type of stuff. And I have always been a talker. So this is kind of
perfect fit.
Like, I talk constantly. I was a relatively sickly child, and so I didn't do a lot of like activities. I just talked. So I either read or talked. And so those were like the two things I did. So having a job where it is my job to talk to people probably is not a horrible surprise to the folks that really know me. So,
well, you certainly use it as an asset. So I'm curious about examples. I'd like to know what legislation you worked on this spring or these past 2 years, as the case may be. And in that, what kind of legislative actions are you most proud of from your work here in Maine this session?
Yeah, so we worked on a lot. I'll try to keep it brief because I know that I could talk about it for, you know, 2 or 3 hours and we do not have that time. So I'll stick to a couple of things from 2 years ago and then focus more on this session. So we've had massive success in dealing with the PFAS issue here in Maine. I'm sure folks have seen the stories about impacted farms, impacted communities. We've worked really hard with Fred Stone and other impacted communities to pass legislation over the past couple of years that is both source reduction, getting PFAS out of our products, and passing policy that will provide resources for those that are impacted. So last session, we passed LD 1503, which bans all non-essential uses of PFAS in products by 2030. It was a first in the world win. No other country, no other state has done this.
That is so exciting.
It's so amazing.
Honestly, what do you do when you go home from work that night? Like, oh yeah, I just passed it first in the world.
First in legislation. The world piece of legislation. We're very excited about it. So, you know, there'll be a lot of rulemaking and implementation around it. But starting in 2023, you will no longer be able to sell in Maine rugs, carpets, or any aftermarket stain treatment that have PFAS in them. And then by 2030, all non-essential uses of PFAS should be phased out of products in Maine, which is amazing. And other states are starting to follow our lead, which is great. We also passed LD 1505, which will phase out the use of PFAS in firefighting foam, which is a big concern for firefighters. That firefighters have higher rates of cancer than the general public, way higher rates of cancer. And that's because of the exposure to all of the toxic chemicals.
Their average life expectancy is in the 40s.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's not from fires.
Right. No, it's not from fires. It's from their turnout gear, from the foam that they deal with. All the toxic chemicals in the products that they use to fight the fires to protect us is killing them, quite frankly. So we are getting PFAS out of firefighting foam, which is great. We passed a law that requires the DEP to test over 700 farms in the state. So the state does this thing where they call beneficial use of biosolids. So that is they spread on farmland sewer sludge from our sewer treatment facility. So it's called sludge or biosolids. Not just Maine does it. Every state in the union does it.
I call it toxic sludge.
Yes, toxic sludge. It's PFAS contaminated sludge and PFAS contaminated compost that is made from that sludge. And so last year, because of Fred Stone and the Tozier farm that were found highly contaminated because of this practice, we passed legislation last year that's going to require the DEP to test the farmland where the sludge has been spread for PFAS so we can get a handle on how much contamination is in the state. And then also last year, we passed legislation that sets a standard for drinking for PFAS in drinking water, one of the strongest in the nation. 20 parts per trillion for 6 PFAS, way stronger than the federal government's 70 parts per trillion. And the federal government's is just an advisory level. It's not an actual standard. So we have a strong standard for PFAS in drinking water. We passed some legislation that makes it easier for low-income Mainers to get their wells tested for arsenic and requires landlords to test their wells for arsenic.
And reveal the test,
which is new. So that's great. That was with the help of one of our C4 board members, Kelsey George, who has a really tough story about arsenic contamination. And so that was last session. And then this session, we worked on LD 1891, which is going to put $500,000 into a pot at the Maine Housing Authority to help low-income Mainers whose wells have been tested positive for contamination to help them pay for remediation, which is fabulous.
And it's huge in our state where more than half of people in our state drink from residential wells. So not everyone has access to sophisticated testing.
Correct. Maine actually is more dependent on residential wells than any other state in the union. So we're super happy to have that fund. So hopefully folks, if you need help, you know, getting your well tested, you can get it tested for free through the Health and Human Services Department. And if you need help remediating, Maine Housing Authority has that funding available.
I'll link to that in the show notes too.
That'd be great. And then we kind of did a lot of PFAS work. We passed LD 1911. First in the nation again, which bans the spreading of biosolids on farmland. So you can no longer contaminate farmland with the sludge, the toxic sludge that comes from our wastewater treatment facilities, which is super exciting. Once again, Maine is a leader here because a Songbird farm, all of these organic farms that kind of came forward in the past few months, all of that contamination is because of legacy use of, municipal and industrial biosolids on their farmland. So that that practice is no more, which is great. You also can't use sludge or compost that's been made from sludge is also banned. So our farmland will start to recover. And I think we're ahead of other states here now in the safety of our farmland, which is amazing.
Yeah, it looks at a glance like Maine has a terrible problem with PFAS, which of course we do. But it looks as if other states don't. But I think the minute they start testing their toxic sludge spread fields, they'll find the same, unfortunately.
100%. Maine is just seems like we have the worst problem because we're actually doing something about it. We started that testing. We've stopped that spreading of sludge on farmland. So I think at the end of the day, even though we're having a little bit of growing pains right now with the process, at the end of the day, Maine is going to be far ahead of other states on this issue. And I think that will only help us when it comes to the, you know, the reputation of Maine's products and farmland as some of the safest and cleanest in the nation because we're not contaminating it, which I think is amazing.
When LD-1911, the Don't Spread Any More Toxic Sludge bill, was before the committee, I was so impressed with how that committee received this information from people. These were really serious stories. And at one point, I just looked in and every Hollywood square was a legislator who was either crying or near tears, morose. I think it really landed. Were there any champions in that process that you'd like to give a shout out to?
Yeah, absolutely. Representative Bill Pluker, who was the lead sponsor of that bill, he's an independent from Warren. He really championed that piece of legislation. Stacey Brenner, who's the committee chair for the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, made that bill stronger. Representative Ralph Tucker, who is termed out, so he's retired, but he is also the House chair of that committee, and he worked tirelessly on it. And then on the other side of the aisle, Senator Rick Bennett, who's a Republican from Oxford, has just been a stalwart on the issue of PFAS contamination. So we had a really bipartisan group of folks that were doing this work and who really kind of stuck their neck out because we had Casella, who runs the state-owned landfill, which is where most of the sludge is going to end up, kind of trying to argue that there wasn't space for it, even though DEP said there was. Municipalities talking about increased cost to municipalities, which unfortunately has proven to be true because Casella took that bill and used it as an excuse to start raising rates on people, even though the DEP has said that there's plenty of space in that landfill. And quite frankly, while, you know, we're bummed that the costs are rising for municipalities, it shouldn't land. Like before that, it was all landing on our farmers. Our farmers were bearing the brunt of that cost. Songbird Farm is decimated. They will never be able to farm. They've moved off that farm. Fred's Farm is destroyed. The Tozier Farm is destroyed. And these are just three, and there's 700 sites to test. So that cost should not land on our farmers. And so while we recognize that there might be some increased cost for municipalities, at the end of the day, we think that's a little bit better than it landing on our farmers. And also, we could have some folks that were better players in this. Like I said, Casella's raising the rates on our municipalities. Maybe we need to look at that. They're a multinational billion-dollar corporation. I think $4.2 billion was there when I looked at their stocks the last time. Like, maybe give our municipalities a little bit of a break here.
Bet you're going to be looking into this more.
We'll have to see. There was legislation passed, the out-of-state waste bill, which also we worked on, although NRCM and Don't Waste Maine and Community Action Works led on that bill. But there's language in that that allows the state to reexamine their contracts. And so hopefully in that process, they can work with Casella to maybe lower the cost for some of our municipalities.
I think that sounds great. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to What Mama Wants, Less Toxics and More Health. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Director of Advocacy at Defend Our Health, which is an organization focused on removing toxics from the environment and supporting public health. Sarah Woodbury's here with us today, and you were giving us some examples from your work in the legislature the last 2 year go-round. Do you have any other examples of legislation you wanted to highlight?
Yeah, I'll just talk about one more, just very, very briefly. Well, two more. We passed LD 1875, and so that we actually worked on with the Penobscot Nation. So that is going to require the state to come up with a way to pretreat landfill leachate, which has PFAS in it, and that leachate ends up at Nine Dragons Wastewater Treatment Facility, which means some of it ends up in the Penobscot River, which means the fish in the Penobscot River, which the Penobscot Nation depend on for their livelihood, is testing high for PFAS. So we worked with our friends at the Penobscot Nation to get that legislation passed. So the state is going to have to come up with a plan to treat that leachate to hopefully limit some of the contamination that's ending up in our rivers. And then we worked... We obviously did not lead on this, but we were very proud of working with the Passamaquoddy on LD 906. This is the bill that basically will allow the Passamaquoddy to drill wells on their own land to get safe drinking water for their community. The Passamaquoddy have been dealing with drinking water issues for decades, for generations, with little help from the state and outside communities, and they have wanted to drill wells on their own land that they already owned, but because of sovereignty issues here in the state of Maine, they were unable to. So they had to pass legislation to allow them to once again drill wells on land that they own to get clean drinking water for their communities. So we were pleased to be even slightly helpful in that. And so we were very pleased that bill passed over 2/3 majority. The governor signed it. So we're excited that the Passamaquoddy can start looking at ways to alleviate the issues around clean drinking water in their community.
I am just relieved for them, having seen the videos on Sunlight Media Collective. The water they were drinking was brown.
It was brown. It smelled funny. It was coming from a reservoir that was not as deep as it should be. And so there was a lot of buildup of kind of natural, I'm blanking on the word that I want, but it's just stuff that built up naturally. And so then the water district would treat it because of the buildup of those issues. And then that treatment meant that they over-treated it sometimes. So Passamaquoddy people were getting burned from the chlorine in the water. So the water was either brown and gross, or they were getting like chemical burns from the for the treatment that was necessary to make the water drinkable. And just the whole situation was untenable. And the fact that it took so long is just a black stain on the state, quite frankly.
It's Mother Earth 101.
Yeah.
Clean drinking water for all, yep. Right? Oh my gosh.
I have to say, I think my favorite thing from that was Representative Schofield, who's a relatively conservative Republican, stood up for that bill and he was like, look, I don't love everything in this bill. I don't think it's a perfect bill, but at the end of the day, everybody deserves access to clean drinking water, so I'm supporting this legislation. And I thought that was just spot on. Like, at the end of the day, everybody deserves access to clean drinking water. And so we were really pleased that it passed.
Hear, hear. Good job. What a powerful couple of years you've had.
Yeah, it's been great. I'm not going to lie. We've been pretty successful.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's terrific to have successes to celebrate. If people want to learn more about these numbers that you spit out, LD Everything, where can they learn more?
So you can go to our website at defendourhealth.org. We have a blog where we've written about all of our legislative successes. You can reach out to me if you want to know more information at swoodbury@defendourhealth.org. I'm always happy to answer questions. But I think our website probably has the most information, which is going to be the easiest place for you to find things. So
defendourhealth.org. It sounds like you didn't have to compromise that much this time. I wonder, when you think about legislation in the future, like magic wand legislation, what would Mother Earth write for some legislation to pass right through and become law?
We have been very lucky. We've had a very friendly legislature. Our issues tend to be bipartisan, but we always tend to get a little bit more support from one side of the aisle than the other, and we've had a very supportive governor. The previous governor decimated the Department of Environmental Protection and made it very hard for us to do our work, so we've been thankful for the support of Governor Mills and, you know, the Senate President Troy Jackson and Ryan Fecteau and all of the folks that have worked on this stuff. In terms of going forward, one of our big mission statements is access to clean drinking water. And so I think we would like to see universal testing for all residential wells to make sure that people have access to clean drinking water. It's not required that you test your wells. We would like to see people testing their wells and making sure that they have access to clean drinking water. We would also like to, and this is very pie in the sky, is kind of re-examine how we regulate toxins. Because right now, toxic chemicals are kind of put forward without a lot of looking into how bad the health impacts are. And so what happens is that a toxic chemical or a chemical is approved by the EPA, and then it goes out into the world, and then 5 years later people start having health impacts, and then we have to fight to get that chemical taken off the market. So we would like to see them having to prove that stuff is safe. Like, let's look at the health impacts before we put this stuff on the market, so we're not constantly playing whack-a-mole with all these toxic chemicals. Like PFAS, there's, you know, depending on who you talk to, between 9 and 14,000 different PFAS. Now, Maine regulates PFAS as a class. The federal government doesn't. And even with all the dangers that are being shown around all these different PFAS, they're still approving new ones every day. So, like, we need to change how we look at how these chemicals get approved for use on the market and for use for people that are using them in their food packaging and their makeup, all of that type of stuff. Like, there's PFAS in your dental floss. Like, why? So, yeah. So we'd like to see kind of a shift in how we regulate our chemicals that are put out there.
That sounds so good to me. And I know other countries do that. You have to prove it's safe first, but that's not how we do it. I think it's alarming to find out, what does that P mean in EPA?
Right.
You know?
And that's where you kind of get into the other side of the lobbying world, where you do have high-powered lobbyists that have these relationships in the government or end up in government positions that are allowed to kind of set these policies. So there is a flip side to the lobbying thing.
Oh, there sure is. Well, I like your vision, and I'm reading Silent Spring, and, you know, it's just shocking to me that in 1960, the very same things were being said. And she was thinking it had been a long time and we should really do something about this. And now it's been all these years since.
I know, it's a never-ending fight.
It's still our hope. Sarah, to close this interview, I'd like to ask you a few quick questions about your personal relationship with the earth, if you're so inclined. What was your favorite thing to do outside in nature as a kid?
Outside in nature, I used to hike with my mother. Like I said, I was a relatively sickly kid, so I had open heart surgery when I was 9, so I didn't do much before that. But once I got my bad valve replaced, we went and we lived in Montana. I was born here in Maine, but we lived in Montana at the time, and we went and hiked the Bitterroots, and, you know, we would spend a lot of time kind of doing various hikes and stuff like that. And that is still one of my favorite things to do, is just go out in the world and wander through the woods here in Maine. There's several trails around where I live in Freeport, so.
Oh, I love it. Describe a scene in nature when you have felt awe. I'm guessing that growing up in Montana, that will be easy.
There, it is, but I think because I grew up there, it's always just been there. I think, I won't swear on your podcast, but I took a family trip with my father and my sister and my nephews, and we went to the Grand Canyon. And the first time I saw the Grand Canyon, I literally stopped dead and went, holy blank.
Cow.
Yes. And so that was just like, and also I went to Scotland a few years ago, and the Highlands are just awe-inspiring. And to be fair, Montana and Maine, also beautiful. But in terms of just like stopping dead in my tracks, I think the biggest experience is with the Grand Canyon.
What's one thing your mother taught you about Mother Earth?
I think she always, you know, taught us to be respectful. And I think my mother's very practical. So when we would like ski into like a cabin or something in the winter or go hiking, it was like pack in, pack out, you pick up after your stuff, you don't leave trash lying around. I don't think she would have referred to herself as any sort of environmentalist, but she was very much about stewardship of the land and taking care of it.
Take care of your mama. What's one thing you wonder about in nature?
Oh my goodness. Why is the ocean so terrifying? No, I mean, which is true, though. I do love the ocean, but sometimes you're just like, what is that down there? I don't know. That's an interesting question. I don't know if I have a good answer for that.
Push the pass button. Finally, what's your favorite baby animal?
Oh my goodness. I love a little baby seal. And I am a cat person. So there's nothing cuter than a little meowing kitten. But I don't think I dislike any baby. It would be hard-pressed to find a baby animal I didn't like. I mean, maybe spiders and snakes and stuff like that. Not big fans. And that might be my wonder why mosquitoes. Maybe that's a wonder why mosquitoes. But yeah, so.
Sarah, people refer to you as the fast-talking and pink-haired woman, which are both clever traits for a lobbyist, but you are also extremely well-informed, respectful, and authentically driven to create a healthier environment for all of us. Thank you so much for the work you do and for being my guest today.
Thank you so much, Kate. That's very sweet of you to say, and thank you for having me. I'm always happy to chat.